Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If movies have lost some of the massive audience that they once had and that singular place in our imaginations they did when Ron Howard and I were kids, the culprit, or one of the culprits, might be video games. Games like EVE Online, which is set in outer space. In EVE, the spaceships look awesome and the politics are really strange and complicated. And instead of just watching it like Star Wars, you're piloting the spaceships and fighting the battles alongside players around the globe. More than 500,000 people were playing EVE Online as of a few years ago. Simon Parkin writes a lot for The New Yorker about technology and gaming, and he's got this story for us about a political uprising that took place in EVE. It may be a galaxy far, far away, but it somehow sounds all too similar to planet Earth, circa right now.
So throughout history, there are moments when a group of upstarts enters the frame. They start out as a laughingstock, then they become a nuisance, and by the time those in power start to take them seriously, it's too late. Everything's changed. Sometimes the revolution takes place on the battlefield, sometimes it takes place in the courtroom, and sometimes the world is upturned right there in the claustrophobic voting booth. In 2007, a revolution took place on the internet, and it was started not by a king or a general, but by a mechanic called John. I spoke to John Boucher via Skype from his home in Canada.
Hello.
In 2006, when he was still in high school, he found an ad for a video game called EVE Online.
There was a lot to understand that I didn't really get, I guess, at the start. So, yeah, it just kind of clicked, and then I played probably solidly for maybe 5 years.
EVE Online is a massively multiplayer online game, which is commonly abbreviated to an MMO, which is a terrible name for a genre, but it's what we're lumbered with. It's set in space. People are given a spaceship when they first show up, and they fall into groups and have to collaborate or compete for territory. They have to mine resources. They battle one another.
Keep bubbling. Keep bubbling and keep bumping.
What EVE does have that kind of marks it out and makes it really interesting is that there aren't really any structured rules in the way that we normally encounter them in video games.
I want you by strike. Someone who can get me a weapon on strike, do it.
So normally you play a video game and it says, go here, do this, you know, find the enchanted sword and deliver it to this dude in this town or whatever. By contrast, in EVE Online, you decide what you want to do, you decide how you're going to do it, you decide whom you do it with.
Let's go. Go, 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 go.
Perpello and an eagle is shooting your Dictor. Perpello and an eagle.
All right, I want Perpello jammed, dampened, dead. Kill Perpello. He's killed
EVE even has its own historian. His name is Andrew Gruen.
EVE Online has been an interesting case because it's almost a petri dish where you can prove if you put a bunch of human beings together in a space, they will self-organize in much the way they have in human history.
If you want to get anything important done in EVE, you'll want to join a group of like-minded people. So John Boucher went looking for a crew to fly with.
I was always into alliance warfare and, like, you know, be able to conquer space. It sounded really cool, you know, like, I ended up part of another alliance, which was kind of like what Banner Brothers would call their pet alliances.
Banner Brothers, which is sometimes called BOB, which is, by the way, another terrible acronym, was one of the largest and most venerable corporations in EVE.
As you can see, we're killing it as fast as it can be killed. All the good guys are on grid. Local is, what, 1,174?
So Banner Brothers was an elite corporation, the alliance with the best ships, the most skilled pilots.
Okay, we'll get a little bit closer. Everyone, orbit Charlie at 2,500. Burn your prop mods on, prop mods on, prop mods
what
on.
What was it like when you first got your chance to play with those guys?
It was cool to see, like, the game celebrities you'd see leading the fleets where before you'd just seen them on the forums or something like that.
Banner Brothers expected their members to respect both the corporation and the game. They had to be dedicated and to be loyal, and they had to be available to fly missions any time of the day or night.
They had what's called alarm clock ops, where they want to do an attack at like 4 a.m. So they try to get everybody to set their alarms and play before work or whatever, stuff like that. And people would do it. I would do it.
Looking
back on it, I'm like, that was ridiculous. Why was I doing that?
So John was still basically a kid. he was able to show up for the Band of Brothers operations. It didn't take long for John to rise all the way through the ranks to the very top, to the directorship of Band of Brothers. In Eve, he was a high-ranking member of the elite. In real life, John had graduated high school, dropped out of college, and was considering joining the Air Force.
I had no idea what I wanted to do, but just get caught up in this, like, internet war against another faction.
Enter the Goons. The Goons came to Eve in 2005. They're a group of players that traces its roots to a website called somethingawful.com. Somethingawful.com is a kind of dark humor website with a hugely active and popular forum. Here's our historian, Andrew Gruen.
It tends to be populated by people who, you know, they like brash jokes, not politically correct, things like that. That's the kind of people that you're talking about. They don't like seeing people take games too seriously. A lot of the main traits of Goons from Something Awful at this time was, we want to have fun with these games. We don't want to see these people who are, you know, total nerds pretending that they're space dictators and acting like Winston Churchill, which was something that you see a lot in early EVE Online history.
We would advertise the fact that our ships cost less than the ammunition of our opponent's ships and that we were still going to ruin their day.
This is Alex Gianturco. Alex was part of the first wave of goons to come to EVE from Something Awful.
So the more that we would do this sort of thing, the more goons would join, the more power we got, and then we started.
What they realized was that if they had enough pilots, it didn't matter if those pilots had no experience. They could overwhelm the enemy through sheer force of numbers.
Well, we were able to completely overthrow the status quo of a massive online game in a galaxy where you had more players in one server than in any other game that exists on the internet.
Swarming Enemies was how the new group got its name. Goon Swarm.
The great Goon Swarm nation will live through the ages, the dream of its people.
This is Goon Swarm's national anthem. The Goons are as bonded by common interests and goals as any real-world political faction, though they're hardly democratic.
Long live our newbies and rifters and the stars.
Most of the stable organizations in EVE Online, amusingly enough, are autocracies. There's a dictator in charge, the CEO or the alliance leader. People like strong dictators. People like strong leadership.
And Alex Gianturco fast became one of the leaders. Thanks to their sheer numbers, their loyalty, and this strong hand guiding them, Goon Swarm started to conquer territory.
Oh God, God.
He's going down.
I want to kill him.
Kill that pod. Kill that pod.
As the Goon Empire expanded, so too did the influence of Goon culture in EVE. Here's Andrew Gruen.
You know, in a very short period of time, you start to see people go from assuming you're supposed to act in that sort of space dictator way that Band of Brothers did, and they start assuming you're supposed to act a little bit more like Goonswarm. And I think that a lot of people don't like that the culture changed and they want to go back to that old way.
Band of Brothers was one of the groups that wanted to go back. They were perfectly happy with an EVE that privileged their wealth and their experience. As far as Band of Brothers was concerned, Goonswarm was, let's say, deplorable. And as far as Goonswarm was concerned, Band of Brothers was a corrupt elite class of insiders who had monopolized power and they didn't care about the average player. And they were kind of earnest and boring to boot. Goonswarm wanted to drain the swamp.
We exist as an entropic collective, a beautiful, perfect chaos.
For this,
we have become a target of fear by those who do not understand the poetry of our actions. Every speck of ash floating amidst the cosmos is another thread woven in the tapestry of our atrocities. Every cry of suffering and frustration is another song in our symphony of terror. New Eden will burn, and it will do so by your hand.
You're listening to the New Yorker Radio Hour. Today, Simon Parkin is bringing the story of a war that was fought in a video game, EVE Online, with tens of thousands of people playing. Two factions of rival players went against each other. The insiders, traditionalists who spent a lot of time playing and dominated the game. And the upstarts who wanted to shake up the old order. Our story continues.
Band of Brothers said that we were a cancer on EVE. And they were the strongest power block in the game. So essentially the Alpha Dog told all of the other power blocks that they needed to side with Band of Brothers and come after us. So July of 2006, the Great War begins.
The Great War. On one side, Band of Brothers, the elite corporation and its allies. On the other side, Goonswarm. And as historian Andrew Gruen recalls, Goonswarm took some familiar steps to attack the establishment. First, find backup. Find
an alliance with the Russian faction.
Next, solidify your support.
Unite all of the other groups in the game against Band of Brothers.
Finally, wage a propaganda war.
Goonswarm worked really hard to make sure that this scandal never went away.
It was a multi-year, multi-platform attack on Band of Brothers, and Goonswarm succeeded in, well, not really accomplishing much. By 2009, the war was at a stalemate. What could turn the tide? Who could bring about ultimate domination for the goons? Where was a hero for such a time?
I was kind of like, maybe a little bored with what I had been doing.
John Boucher had been playing with Band of Brothers for a while by now. He wasn't having a great time. He was kind of bored with the way that they played the game, the earnestness, the grueling schedule.
Like, it felt like a full-time job to play with them.
John just wanted to have a bit of fun in space, so he adopted an alias and started playing beginner missions, just flying spaceships, with none of the responsibilities of being a director. And wouldn't you know it, John got himself recruited by Goonswarm. Our goon friend, Alex Gianturco, remembers it well.
Actually, my attorney had recruited somebody as a scam.
Do you mean attorney in the game or attorney outside the game?
Attorney outside the game. I'm an attorney by trade, and the joke about Goonswarm is that its nickname is Lawyer Swarm.
So your friend and attorney has targeted the Band of Brothers executive and convinced him to join your spy agency. Is that right?
I wish it was that targeted. It's a funny old thing. And it comes time for my friend to execute the scam. And the guy says, well, you know, I've had more fun playing with Goonswarm for the last 3 days than I have had in years being a director in Band of Brothers. And I like you guys. Please don't kick me out.
It was kind of just more fun laid back, and it felt like a game.
Gianturco and the rest of the goons tried to figure out how to use their new spy.
Finally, it hits me in a flash of intuition that he could shut down Band of Brothers, removing the alliance from the game.
I was just looking at stuff to steal, to be honest. And then I found a button saying, you can disband them. And I'm like, oh, that would be interesting.
Was there ever, you know, any hesitation from you, you know, were you immediately like, this is what I want to do?
There wasn't any hesitation. I kind of, I thought it'd be hilarious. When I hit this band, people were losing their mind, trying to find out what had just happened. And I don't know, there's all kinds of speculation. They're calling people on their phones to wake them up, like, to figure out what's going on. And it was nuts.
Did you ever hear from any of them again?
Oh, yeah, I got death threats from some guys. People were talking about going to my boss, like calling my bosses at work. I don't know what they'd say. Oh, this guy stole my spaceship in a video game. Like,
now, if you don't play video games, you might chuckle at people taking all of this so seriously. But imagine it's your hobby. You've spent 1,000 hours across 5 years creating something incredible, like the most amazing model railway, a vintage Harley that you rebuilt from scratch, or the most beautiful sweater ever knitted. And then someone comes along and they say it's boring, and then they pull it apart and they set it on fire. That's what John Boucher did, and the goons loved him for it. Here they are on a group chat online the next day.
We money, we want. one here.
As for the former members of Banner Brothers, well, even in victory, the goons had proven themselves deplorable. Here's a Banner Brothers spokesman on an Eve radio show the day after the disbanding.
It's not proper, is it? It's not really. I've planned to do this for the last 8 months. I've spent 8 months of my life talking to people that I didn't really like and that I wanted to screw over. This is, God, I don't really like this. I fancy a change. Actually, no, I'm going to lose all my stuff if I don't do something about this, because I've actually joined a corp that was going to scam me.
Honourable or not, elegant or not, deplorable or not, the Goon Swarm was victorious.
Conquering invaders and returns to our homeland, the crew are of thee, our glory.
Victory in the Great War was great for Goonswarm, but it didn't do much for John Boucher, the man who'd made it all happen.
We gave him a mothership, which is a super capital class vessel, in return for his service.
And that kind of sucked the life out of the game for me. You're stuck in this huge, really expensive ship, and people want to kill it. So I would log on, and I would just, like, hide around a force field, or in a force field, just to, so I'm not getting attacked. And eventually I sold that, but I didn't want to fall into it being, like, a job again. I kind of wanted to do other stuff.
So you're kind of a victim of your own success, really.
I guess you could say that.
I think the most interesting thing about EVE Online is the way that it shows us when we're presented with this fresh galaxy where we can be whoever we want to be, where we can do whatever we want to do, we can organize however we want to. What we find happens is we tend to fall back into our old ways. We just do all the same things that humans have been doing throughout history. We organize into factions. We create self-serving alliances. We follow charismatic leaders who say the things we want to hear.
It obviously, like, reminds me of what's going on at the moment, you know, perhaps with things like the US election. You know, is that overstating things to say that you can see things mirrored?
EVE is a dark mirror of humanity as a whole, not merely in the political level. EVE teaches you things about how people behave that most people are protected from. I've seen some really sort of searing unpleasantness. I wish I could say something wonderful about how EVE shows us that there is hope and that there is a better side to human nature. It's very Hobbesian, though, and EVE reflects in many ways what humans are like in a position of insecurity. Human nature, when it is under threat, and in EVE your assets are always under threat, is a very different thing from, I think, what we would want it to be from a liberal democratic perspective.
That's Alex Gianturco. New Yorker contributor Simon Parkin is the author of Death by Video Game: Danger, Pleasure, and Obsession on the Virtual Frontline.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.